namo bhagavate vasudevaya Paranjana becomes a woman in the next life. Text number 11. We'll probably read 12. Not a very big purport. Bhaya namaya. Bhaya namno grajo bhrata.
Bhaya namno grajo bhrata.
Vrajvara pratyapastitaha. Tadahakam purim kritsnam.
Tadahakam purim kritsnam.
Bratu priya chikishaya.
Bratu priya chikishaya.
Bhaya namno grajo brata.
Bhaya namno grajo brata.
Rajvara pratyupastitaha.
Rajvara pratyupastitaha.
Tadahakam purim kritsnam.
Tadahakam purim kritsnam.
Bratu priya chikishaya.
Bratu priya chikishaya.
Bhaya namno grajo brata. Tadahatam purim kritsnam. Bratu priya chikirshaya. Bhayanam naha.
Of Bhaya.
Fear. Agrajaha. Elder, Bhrata, brother, Prajvaraha, named Prajvara, Pratyupastitaha,
being present there,
Dadaha, set fire, Tam, to that, Purim, city,
Kritsnam,
wholesale,
Bratuhu,
his brother,
Priya Chikishaya,
in order to please. Under the circumstances, the elder brother of Yavanaraj, known as Prajvara, set fire to the city to please his younger brother, whose other name is Fear itself. Purport. According to the Vedic system, a dead body is set on fire. But before death, there is another fire, which is called Prajvara or Vishnudvara. Medical science verifies that when one's temperature is raised to 107 degrees, a man immediately dies. This Prajvara, or high fever, at the last stage of life, places a living entity in the midst of a blazing fire. text 12 as well. Tasyam sandhayamanayam
sapatandayamanayam.
I'm just going to read it.
Okay.
Otherwise we'll be here for a while. Sapora saparichada ko tumbika kutumbinya udpat apyata sanvayaha. When the city was set ablaze, all the citizens and servants of the king, as well as all family members, sons, grandsons, wives, and other relatives, were within the fire. King Karanjana thus became very unhappy. Purport. There are many parts of the body, the senses, the limbs, the skin, the muscles, blood, marrow, etc. And all these are considered here figuratively as sons, grandsons, citizens, and dependents. When the body is attacked by the Vishnu dweller, the fiery condition becomes so acute that sometimes one remains in a coma. This means that the body is in such severe pain that one becomes unconscious and cannot feel the miseries taking place within the body. Indeed, the living entity becomes so helpless at the time of death that although unwilling, he is forced to give up the body and enter another. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that man may, by scientific advancement, improve the temporary living conditions, but that he cannot avoid the pangs of birth, old age, disease, and death. These are under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the agency of material nature. A foolish person cannot understand this simple fact. Now people are very busy trying to find petroleum in the midst of the ocean. They are very anxious to make provisions for the future petroleum supply, but they do not make any attempts to ameliorate the conditions of birth, old age, disease, and death. Thus a person in ignorance, not knowing anything about his own future life, is certainly defeated in all his activities. Om Maya Timirandasya Ginam Janasadataya Chakshurum Militam Dena Tasmae Sri Gurave Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadanti Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nanghayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamam Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Janma Mritu Jara Vyadhi Dukkha Dosha Anudarshanam. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that we should understand the sufferings of the material body. This is considered to be one of the 16 items of knowledge. I remember when I was about 16, and I was reading different Buddhist texts and other literature, trying to find out what the purpose of life was. And I came to the conclusion that Since everything was destroyed at the time of death, one might as well die now. So I went and told my mum, might as well just kill myself now. My mother was not at all impressed. She said, oh, don't be so morbid. Don't be so morbid. And you know, ordinarily, I suppose, a preoccupation with death and dying is not a pleasant thing. It's not a pleasant thing. But it's a fate that we all must face at some point in time. It's not something that we can ignore. And as Prabhupada points out, we've forgotten the pain of birth. Right? We've forgotten the pain of birth. You know, because death is around the corner, we tend to ignore it, blot it out. But as Prabhupada points out, you can't ignore disease and old age, unless you're a young man, of course, or a young. Hard to conceive of old age when you're young. And yet all of these things are obvious, they're all around us. But we tend to ignore them. And there's a good reason for that, because they're not a pleasant meditation. It's not a pleasant meditation to consider these things. But Prabhupada makes a point, and Krishna makes a point in the Bhagavad Gita, and the Bhagavatam talks about these things, the movement of the living entities. And here we see, in this case, the example of, or the whole story of Puranjana is designed to help us understand the difficulties, the obstacles, the troubles, the sufferings that come about as a result of having accepted this material body. And so therefore, the materialistic mentality or the materialistic mindset doesn't want to meditate or think about these things. And of course, good reason, one becomes depressed. Not much hope in life if all we can think of is birth, death, old age and disease. But we should have a thorough understanding of these principles, because they're actually an impetus for making advancement in spiritual life. This is why the Vedas and the Bhagavatam and Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita is an impetus to make advancement in spiritual understanding, and to appreciate that the material world is designed actually to be a place of suffering. It is not a place to remain in to try to get some pleasant outcomes in life. Yehi samsparsa ja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate adyanta manta kuntaya nateshu ramate buddha. Right? The pleasures of material existence are not embraced by an intelligent person, because they have a beginning, they have a middle, and then they have an end. Just like the material body. We're born, we grow, we maintain ourselves for some time, we produce byproducts, we dwindle, and then gone in the end. These are the natural cycles of material existence. Right? These are the natural cycles. So the course of events in material life are always going to be up and down. And so the transcendentalist doesn't place all of their hope and all of their aspirations and all of their the fulfillment of all of their desires in pursuit of material activities, because there's always going to be some victory and there's always going to be some defeat. There's going to be some happiness, there's going to be some distress, right? And so the transcendentalist remains steady in all of these, in the difficulties and in the triumphs, because material existence is always in a state of flux. One day we've got money in the bank, the next day it's gone. Well, we become happy when our bank balance goes up, and then when the periodic payment to pay the mortgage or the rent or the gas, the electricity goes out, we go, ugh. So this is just the nature of it. It's the ebb and flow of the tides, which is time. It's the time factor, and of course Krishna recommends that in that ebb and flow, the changing of the seasons, hot and cold, pleasure and pain, happiness and distress, one remains steady, pratikshava. Right? That was that verse in the second chapter. Matra spashas tukunteya. Sukaduka. No, what is it?
Sukaduka.
Tamstatikshasva Bharata. Yeah, tam, be tolerant. Right? Be tolerant. Material existence is always coming and going. And in the final stage, very, very unpleasant. As is evidenced here by Paranjana. And you know, when one is absorbed in material pursuits and material success, then there's always going to be disappointment, especially at the time of death, because everything that one's worked for, everything that one's accumulated, everything, it's all just burnt up. One's hopes and aspirations are all destroyed. So naturally he's become unhappy. What to speak of the pain and the suffering. And that's evidenced in the form of the fire. The elder brother of Yavana Raja, known as Prajvara, set fire to the city to please his younger brother, whose other name is Fear itself. So at the state of death, one is very, very fearful, and one is suffering in this burning situation, because we're all, in one sense, burning. Samsara dava nala lida loka. Burnt by our desires, by the mode of passion, by calm, which pushes us to act. And then as a consequence of all of those actions pushed by desire, in the end we're also burnt. Burnt by the reactions of our sinful activities. Even if you're pious, right? Even if a person is pious, he still has to go through the sufferings of birth, death, old age and disease. So the Vedas describe these sufferings in order for us to be inspired to get out of the material world, to understand the true nature of material existence and what it actually means. And take advantage of that knowledge and transcend the bodily concept of life and the sufferings that come with the body, and rise up to the level of understanding we're not the body, that we are spiritual by nature, and that we have our spiritual activities. And how one becomes in love. I heard a very interesting story yesterday. They didn't say who the devotee's name was, but there was a devotee up in Moorambah who had been suffering from diabetes most of his life, and his kidneys had stopped functioning. Right? And he was on dialysis, so he was feeling he made a decision that he should leave his body. He'd been told that if he didn't have dialysis, then it would only take 5 days to leave his body. So the devotees made a lot of arrangements for him, set up the palliative care ward in the Moorambah hospital with pictures, you know, Vrindavan and Krishna. The devotees came and had kirtan, and they were there to support him while he was leaving the body. Of course, it didn't take 5 days. You know how long it took? 5 weeks. And the consensus amongst the devotees was that because he got such good care from the devotees, because he got such support, he was enthused and enlightened by the association that he had. Right? So despite the fact that he was in a wreck, you know, he was in a car wreck of a material body, because of the association of the devotees, he stayed so long. Right? So, you know, the power of spiritual realization, the power of spiritual understanding, the power of bhakti, basically devotional service and devotional practice, where one's situated on a spiritual platform, helps us transcend these and tolerate these material difficulties, these sufferings, which each one of us must face at some point in time. And Prabhupada makes a point here that, you know, the temperature of the body rises, and then when it reaches a certain point, then one is forced to leave the body. Right? And of course, you know, in modern society, we're taught and we think that's it. But as Prabhupada points out, this is gross ignorance of modern society. If we think that at the time of death, that's it, that's the finish. No, it's not the end. One then takes another birth. Right? And it all starts all over again. Birth, death, old age and disease. Right? So this is why we study these what appear to be morbid topics. Morbid topics. To have a proper understanding of the nature of material existence, and then to defeat that the misconceptions that come about as a result of the bodily conception of life, and use it as an inspiration to take to the practice of devotional service, where one can then transcend by the positive engagement of devotional service, one's able to understand through realization and direct perception. Pratyak sarvagamam dhamyam susukam katam avyayam. By the engagement in the process of devotional service, one becomes happy, naturally becomes happy and can then transcend the miseries of materialism, even at the point of death. A devotee is able to rise above the sufferings that will inevitably come as a result of the demise of this this body. We can't avoid it, but we can, instead of being consumed by the fire of death, right, the fiery condition, our Prabhupada says here, when the body is attacked by the Vishnu Jwara, right, the fiery condition becomes so acute that one remains in a coma. Right? So consumed by the fire. So what we have to do is become consumed by the fire of Sankirtan. Right? You know, the devotees used to say, you've got to get fired up. Right? So it's a different kind of fire. The blazing fire of Sankirtan burns up all the miseries of material existence. We're not against fire. We're into fire, but we're into the fire of Sankirtan. You know, when you go out on Sankirtan and you're chanting Hare Krishna, then all the miseries, you know, you could be facing the direst, most disastrous situation. Right? There's no money in the bank, there's no one to go out on Sankirtan, you know, there's creditors beating at your door. But when you're chanting Hare Krishna, it just all dissolves. It all just disappears. It just all goes away. And all one can experience is the pleasure of transcendental life. So despite the fact that the devotees have, you know, everybody has this, what should we say, pessimistic future. Mm-hmm. Right? Even Prabhupada will say, trust no future, no matter how bright. Right? Except for the future of the devotees who know that by the performance of Sankirtan, by chanting Hare Krishna, by engaging in devotional service, then the material future, there's no hope, but in the full absorption in transcendental Krishna consciousness, one is able to exist on a higher platform, on the real platform of self, not identifying with the pleasures and pains of the material body, but existing on the transcendental platform. So, even though these are somewhat pessimistic topics, we need a full understanding of the nature of material existence as a means or as an impetus to make progress in our spiritual life. And that's why this understanding of birth, death, old age and disease and the troubles that come from it is mentioned in the list of knowledge. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's part of knowledge. Yeah. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that man may, by scientific advancement, improve the temporary living conditions, but he cannot avoid the pangs of birth, old age, disease and death. These are under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the agency of material nature. A foolish person cannot understand this simple fact. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Question is, my vajayas
yes, okay, good. Maharaj.
It said that Krishna doesn't interfere with our independence, which is in parts and parcels, we also have minor independence. But he's forcing us and to these terrible miseries. So, where is our independence? It gives us birth, old age, disease, and death every lifetime.
Where is the independence?
He's interfering with our independence by giving us birth, old age.
Nice. Well, it appears like that, but actually it's not, because, you know, we're a bit like a drunken man, right? Who thinks he's in charge of everything. You know, goes to the pub, has a few drinks, and he comes out, yells at everybody, tells everybody what they should be doing. But actually, he's a drunken. He doesn't know what he's doing. And as a result of the, you know, the desires that come about as a result of this drunken kind of state, then he gives us a whole range of facilities so that we can make out like we're God, basically. We can make out like we're in charge. But that's ignorance. That's a state of ignorance. And so therefore, the material energy is designed in such a way so as to teach us a lesson. Right? You know, there's that example of Srila Prabhupada not wanting to go to school, right? And Gaur Mohan Day couldn't discipline his son. If you know, he bought Prabhupada one gun, but Prabhupada said, "I want two guns, right? One for each hand." So he had to. And yet, his mother was more of a strict disciplinarian. You know, she wanted to discipline her son. And so in order to get Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, then Abhay Tarun, to go to school, they used to have to pay the uncle. Was it the uncle? Did they pay him? I think somebody was employed. A servant was employed to take Srila Prabhupada to school because Guma, they couldn't discipline his son. Right? So they paid somebody to take the boy to school. And he'd fight, kick and carry on. He'd have to be taken. So, you know, it appears he was being restricted or he was being disciplined. But ultimately the parents knew that was for his benefit. You know, you've got to go to school, you've got to be educated, right? So, Krishna is compassionate and he cares for everybody, but he knows in the drunken state they don't know what they're doing, right? And so therefore they need to be disciplined. They need to go to school, right? Basically, to learn the reality of material existence. And so therefore the material energy, Devihi Isha Gunamaya Mama Maya Duratya, you know, the material energy is ultimately Krishna's energy, and it's working under Krishna's control, yes, but it's for the ultimate benefit of the living entity. Right? It appears that we're suffering, and some people, this happened to my mum. My parents made sure that we went to church every Sunday when I was a kid. Right? And then in later years, in their 70s, I was visiting Adelaide a lot. So I was staying with my parents. And then I noticed Mum and Dad weren't going to church anymore. I noticed. And I said to my mum, "Why did you stop going to church?" And she said, "Oh, I find it very hard to believe in God when there's so much trouble and so much misery and so much unhappiness in the world." Huh? So because there's so much suffering, my mum lost faith in in God, effectively. Right? So it requires a deeper understanding and a deeper appreciation that suffering is actually for our benefit and is the impetus or is the it's a vehicle by which we're being rectified and educated as to what the real nature of material existence is. And so, yes, on the one hand, it looks like we're being restricted. But then on the other hand, the material energy is kind also, mercifully, in that, you know, you want to be a this? Okay, here you go. If you want to be a that, all right, try this. Right? So you get the opportunity to exercise your independence and exercise your desires, but at the same time you also get up. Okay, wake up. Right? And it might take some time, but that's ultimately, you know, the lesson will be learned. So the material energy, whilst it appears to be unforgiving, unrelentless, it's actually for our benefit to wake us up. And nobody likes to go to school. Although these days they make it pretty attractive. The kids are all enthusiastic to go. We took Ramai to school the other day. He was pretty happy to go to school. He's only there for a couple of hours. Then, you know, Monday, Tuesday, then you get Wednesday off. When I went to school in grade one, you just went to school. That was it. Didn't get a day off or a couple of hours here or there. Yeah, in school. And you always look forward to the holidays. But isn't it interesting? The material existence is, you know, when you're in school, you look forward to the holidays. Then by the end of the holidays, you think, oh boy, I want to go back to school. Then when you get to school, you think, oh no, school's the same. It's horrible. Let's have the holidays. Anything else?
In the middle of happiness and distress, how do you be satisfied?
In happiness and distress?
How do you be satisfied?
Take prasadam. Chant Hare Krishna. You know, when we... You know, practically the solution to all problems when you're talking to the devotees is chant Hare Krishna. I was talking to William. Does anybody know William? William? You know William? No, do you? Okay. He's reading the Bhagavad Gita. He told me he was reading the Bhagavad Gita. So I thought I'll test him. See if he's actually read the Bhagavad Gita or not. So I said, okay, what does Krishna say? And he said, Krishna says we should surrender to him. Okay, so I thought, okay, all right. Sounds like he's read the Bhagavad Gita. And then I said, what does that mean? And he said, chant Hare Krishna. Okay, he's got it. He's got the essence of the Bhagavad Gita boiled down into it. So, whoa, that's pretty good, you know, for a young fellow who's just starting in his spiritual life and he's read the Bhagavad Gita. He's basically got it. So, when one perfects the chanting of Hare Krishna, and you know, there are three stages of chanting, and in the beginning we're offensive. Inattentive, or we're meditating on material desires, or you know, or just not focusing on the sound of the mantra. Chanting Hare Krishna may be difficult in that situation, but Prabhupada encourages us to come to the clearing stage where we're able to avoid the offences and clearly pronounce the mantra and hear the mantra. Then in that clearing state, even we may not be on the perfectional stage of chanting, but in the clearing stage one feels relief from the pressures of material distress. This is reality. If we're chanting Hare Krishna according to the guidelines that are given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis who really give us the science of how to practice bhakti. And a lot of our devotional practice revolves around the chanting of Hare Krishna. It's the foundational element, fundamental element of our devotional practice. Then, even if there is happiness and distress, one becomes so absorbed in the chanting, we forget about all of those things. It's such a satisfying thing to do because it connects us with who we really are. Right? And we're Satchidananda by nature. You know, the happiness and distress of material existence are rather futile. Chasing happiness in the material realm is futile, whereas the happiness that we're looking for already exists in ourselves. It's who we are. And so that's why the chanting of Hare Krishna is so important, is because it clears away all of that, the dross, the gross elements, and reveals our spiritual identity. And we then naturally become happy. So it might appear to be trite, you know, when we say to people, just chant Hare Krishna. But actually, it's the truth. It's the Yuga Dharma, in fact. So can't avoid it. Mahamaji.
You want to say something about Mahamacharyas?
I didn't, no. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but I like to concentrate on the Bhagavatam. And if you'd like to find out about Madhvacharya, you can go and look it up in Prabhupada's books. If you notice, Srila Prabhupada rarely spoke about these things when he gave class. And he gave class almost every day of the week. So in Prabhupada's Bhagavatam classes, what did he concentrate on?
Bhagavatam.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd just go and read something and then repeat it and then probably forget it. So, you know, we're not obliged, may I point this out, we're not obliged to have to speak on every person who took birth on that particular day. But we are obliged to speak on the Bhagavatam. That's something Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do every day. So I'm sorry, my knowledge of Madhvacharya is pretty... I've been to Madhvacharya's house and I took bath there. That was nice. It was a hot day, as it can be. Actually, we went to Trinity Govinda. We drove from Bangalore to Udupi, right, to see Udupi Krishna. And... on the way home, so we drove there one day, had darshan and saw the festival. You know, they have a Rath Yatra around, so we participated in that, and then had some prasadam. They've got all prasad. They've got all shops around that perimeter of that, if my memory is correct. Well, certainly there's lots of shops where you can buy prasadam. So we had a meal, then we went to. Took rest, woke up in the morning, and then drove back to Bangalore. But on the way, we stopped at Madhvacharya's house, where he lived as a child. It was nice.
You've heard most important. Udupi Krishna.
Udupi Krishna.
Most, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it. You got the length and breadth of my. Madhvacharya is great, but I'm sorry, but I don't know very much. So there's something for you to do, Mahatmaji, today. You can go and study Madhvacharya. Okay? Yes.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you told about like we should chant.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the starting we have these offenses.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to finish these offenses?
What's the best way to?
Finish off these offenses.
Get rid of offenses? Keep chanting. First of all, know what the offences are. Right? And then try to avoid them. Maharaj?
I was going to suggest that we chant this.
Yes, that's Prabhupada recommends that. The Panchatattva Maha Mantra, have you heard of that? Yep. You know it? Yep. It's pretty hard. Huh? So by chanting the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, one can remove the offences in chanting Hare Krishna. But it is very interesting, isn't it? We're still recommended to chant Hare Krishna. Huh? Still recommended to chant Hare Krishna. Otherwise, we you could say, why don't we just chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra? And some devotees do. When I was taught to chant Hare Krishna, then I was told you have to chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra before you chant around, and then at the end you chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. Right? Good day, mate. Retreat now. But I heard later on that Srila Prabhupada didn't do that. Prabhupada didn't chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra between his rounds. He just chanted Hare Krishna. So that's something interesting to meditate on. Got to keep an eye on the kids. Not you, me. I was giving a Sunday feast once, and a child not much older than him, was standing next to me, like, what are you up to? And then he reached over and pulled my nose. Much to the amusement of everybody, and to my surprise. So I learned you've got to keep an eye on the kids. Bring it.
Just on the last point, when Prabhupada initiated the disciples, did they chant the Panchatattva
Mantra? When he initiated them?
Yeah. He didn't chant the Panchatattva
Mantra. He just said, chant 16 rounds. Yeah. But Prabhupada does say, And especially when we have kirtan, you know, when we have sankirtan, then we always, you know, we offer up obeisances to Prabhupada. And we can offer obeisances. Even Prabhupada would sing, you know, Vandeham Sri Guru, you know, you can offer obeisances to the Parampara, to the spiritual master and so forth. But then Panchatattva Maha Mantra, then Hare Krishna. That's kind of our process in Sankirtan. But in chanting japa, like I say, when I was taught to chant, the devotees told me, chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. So I did. I don't think it did me any harm. But I thought it was interesting to find out later on that Prabhupada didn't do that. And so I guess. I don't quite know what the takeaway is from that. I'll leave it up. It's a meditation. You can think about it. Okay. Oh, yes, sir.
I have a last question. When we say that the city of Puranjana is like the his body. So then, like, when he went for a hunt, what does that represent?
When he went for the hunt?
Yeah.
So the city is his body, right? And what does it mean when he went hunting? What does it say in the purports to those verses? What does it say? Yeah. Do you remember? No. Okay. I suggest you go back and have a look at those purports, because it mentions there. It's you know, it's the going hunting. It's the pursuits of the material. It's the pursuits. It represents the pursuits of the living entity in the material world, and you know all of the activities that one executes to be successful in material life. So going hunting is, you need to look at those purports, because Prabhupada does mention it there, and I can't remember it off the top of my head, all the details. Okay. So instead of me doing the work, my students usually find out that I make them work. Okay, Kandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.